motherfucking K, homeboy. A to the motherfucking K. A to the motherfucking K, homeboy. A to the motherfucking K. Okay, and we're back. So the next segment, as we all know, as we're all used to, is the Ringside Report, in which we talk about all the latest news and rumours. As those of you who have been here from the start of the episode, you'll know that we have a special guest with us today, Mr. Orange Cassidy. Say hello, Orange. And of course, the man who puts the K in A to the K, we have Carl with us as well.
Hi, everyone. I think you'll all agree it's just amazing to have, you know, someone like Orange Cassidy here to join us on our podcast. I think he's, you know, as you will have already heard, he's added loads of amazing insights so far. So I can't wait to see what he brings to this one as well.
And to be honest, I mean, obviously, Orange, you're in the business. You know, it's an absolute privilege to have you here. We are humbled. And I imagine you're going to have loads to add to. So you must know a ton of rumours and backstage little secrets that I'm sure you're going to share with us. So I do look forward to it. So I'll kick off if we could and this is stuff that I kind of wanted to allude to in This Week in Wrestling because it has a lot of bearing on it. But basically the first news article I've got is that the mayor of Orange County has actually shut down the Performance Center. I make it sound like he deliberately came out and went, no, Performance Center shut down. Basically, as of the 26th of March, any non-essential business or place like that has to be closed. So it's a blanket thing. It's not specifically targeted to the Performance Center, but naturally the Performance Center is not deemed essential. So technically no one should be working from the Performance Center as of the 26th of March, which would suggest that there's been a lot of, because WWE were aware of this, although we're only recently aware of it, they were aware of it. So there seems to be a lot of this frantic pre-taping to get everything together so that they can abide by the law and shut the Performance Center down. So I'm curious as to whether they've had to maybe ignore the law a little bit, or whether they've managed to get a lot of the pre-taping elements done. I am curious about that, or whether that might be a reason for the shift in location for certain things, like NXT being back at Full Sail. But yeah, so it seems that the issue might not be an immediate issue for them. You know, we're still going to get Mania, we're still going to get SmackDown and Raw and so on, but eventually they're going to run out of tapings, and potentially they might run out of locations that they can legitimately, legally film from if everyone's going to start blanketing this rule of, you know, non-essential works cannot be done. How do you feel about it, Carl?
I mean, it's going to be interesting. So we know that they've pre-taped a lot of stuff. So they pre-taped Mania. They actually pre-taped the post-Mania Raw before they even taped Mania. So we know they've done some stuff in advance. But if this has been put into effect from the 26th of March, like, if they can't film, what does that mean? So, you know, are they going to have to stop with episodes for a while? And, you know, if they can emanate from the Performance and if they can emanate from Full Sail, then, you know, why can they still emanate from there but not the Performance Center?
I know it's an unusual one, isn't it? I think I'm not sure where do you know where Full Sail's located?
So it's in Florida as well. So
So it should be under the same ruling then. Yes, I'm not sure what that is. I don't know if they can sort of get around it by literally moving, like, I don't know if it's across America, you see, whether it's because it's the Orange County mayor who's put it in, so whether each state then has to enforce this and put this in, so maybe that they can move around the country until everywhere's done it. I don't know, but it smacks of probably a little bit of fear for the future of going, depending on how long this closure is, they could run out of stuff to actually put on the air. And what are they going to do? Are they going to start doing reruns? Never seen it before, but are they going to start doing it?
I mean, I think if worst came to worst, then I think dude, we'd rather stick on a rerun show than nothing at all, because, you know, anything to still get the WWE kind of product out there. So I think that would be the case. But I think if more and more places start doing this and start shutting, you know, things down, like you mentioned a really good point before around the likes of AEW who don't have that back catalogue, what would they do in a time like this? So it's going to be...
I mean, they might get away with putting, like, stuff that isn't normally televised on Dynamite and go, well, we'll put some other AEW stuff on so we can start playing some dark matches on the TV rather than YouTube, or we can start putting Be the Elite on the TV. I don't know if the Yanks get that televised. We certainly don't. We only get Dynamite. But maybe they can sort of play around with the format in that sense and put some of the other stuff they're putting out there in its place. But yeah, it's going to be a lot harder for them than it is WWE. They've got a massive back catalog. They could even start putting some old WCW stuff on if they fucking wanted to.
Yeah. Crazy times. I think it's just unprecedented, isn't it? I think, as you've said, crazy to think we might be in a time where WWE are putting out reruns or, you know, unable to film new shows. It's just mad. Just interesting to see how it all unfolds, really.
Yeah, totally unreal. So the next one I've got is, there's a few other names, but I'll mention the biggest one and then we'll carry on with that. But the big news hit that Roman Reigns will not be at WrestleMania. Now, I wanted to mention this earlier and I thought, no, I'll wait till now, because we had this news hit. Obviously, we reacted to this on social media as well in some respects, but it seems fairly foregone. It come from Dave Meltzer's, I can't remember what they call his website now, but they come from Dave Meltzer. That's the info that's been handed down. He's not one to take any risks, totally understandably. I think we mentioned it last week that it makes a bit of sense if his immune system's low due to leukemia and such. Why would you take any risk in that sense? But it seems that he's not going to be participating in Mania. Weirdly, though, it wasn't acknowledged at all on SmackDown, and this news came out before SmackDown. So I'm not sure what the reaction is of WWE, whether it's a bit of misinformation and they've actually already filmed Roman's bit, because there is a lot of pre-taping, or whether there is truth to the fact that Mania is not going to have Roman in it at all, and in which case WWE have done nothing to deal with that issue. And from what you see on SmackDown, they were still sort of advertising it as well. So I don't know what the deal is with that match going forward.
I feel like, as well, it's all gone a bit quiet since this came out. Like, I feel like we haven't had any further updates. It was strange for them not to, mention it or have any kind of allusions to the fact on SmackDown.
Even if they couldn't, film anything, they could have done a quick voiceover and gone, look, we received this news, blah, blah, blah. Understandably, it's difficult times. But they didn't address it even slightly. They even advertised the match between the two of them. So it's like, well, you know, and the graphic was saying face to face, and you're like, well, is it? Mm. So it seems a bit. I don't know if maybe we're well aware that he's now isolating, and the suggestions got out there maybe a bit incorrectly, and they actually have managed to film the match. I don't know, but the suggestion on the back of it was that Braun Strowman was the likely replacement for him, which would have been shocking. Let's assume a Braun Strowman versus Goldberg match happens. How do you feel about it, Carl?
I mean, let's be honest. Any Goldberg match isn't going to be fucking match of the night anyway, is it? And, you know, I mean, I don't know. What's worse? Because I wasn't looking forward to Spear versus Spear, so I'm not looking forward to fucking, you know, him getting these hands, if that's the case. But I don't know whether people are just jumping on that because Braun doesn't really have an opponent at this time or what, really. But I think it's just that whole level of uncertainty on what's actually happening, because for all we know, it could just be fucking Dave Meltzer chatting shit or getting the wrong end of the stick, which wouldn't be the first time. And then exactly. Everyone going crazy about it. But, you know, how pissed off would you be if you're The Fiend? Because Vince has obviously dropped you like a bad habit couple of months before, took the title off you to really build up to Spear versus Spear, and then that match won't even happen potentially. Like, you'd be fucking pissed, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah. It seems a good time actually when you mention The Fiend to give a shout out to a bit of a conversation that was had on YouTube, in which it was I made a comment in relation to potential for Braun versus Goldberg. And some of the response, I want to say his username was Blackwind50. Not that it matters too much, but just give him an honest shout out that it was his suggestion that they could adjust it so that the winner of John Cena versus The Fiend goes on to face Goldberg for the title all in the same night. And I think that would be a boss booking idea to deal with the situation. And you could even storyline that out. You could even have The Fiend or Bray Wyatt explain that you know, he had to face John. You know, there's that history there, and he needed to face John at Mania, and he knew that if he still held the title, that wouldn't be the case. So he deliberately didn't carry on. He didn't put the effort in with Goldberg, and now he's dealt with John. He's going to go back for the title or whatever. They could have even storyline it out if that was the case. So they could give the steam back to the Fiend, and I think that, admittedly, it's a suggestion from a conversation we've had on YouTube with someone, but. As far as a booking goes, that would be an absolutely fucking brilliant idea.
The only thing that makes me think that that might not happen is if they have having to do this as a Firefly Funhouse match now, then I don't know whether the different locations might become a factor for them, for either of those two being able to kind of play.
That's a fucking good point. That's a really good point that they're clearly going to film that match on location, so or already have, as the case may be. But yeah, it'd be unrealistic for them to get there back to Goldberg, wouldn't it? So I do take points on that. But yeah, so along with Roman being out, we've also received information that Rey Mysterio, The Miz, and Dana Brooke might or are likely to be in isolation. So interestingly, that would put The Miz out of the tag match for Mania, which would mean they would either not be able to do the tag match because he's one of the tag title holders, or more likely that they would get a replacement. And again, another little suggestion that's being knocked about is, because it's obviously John Morrison by himself, is to bring Joey Mercury in just for one match to replace The Miz. And it'd be worth a chuckle just for that. Like, but very unlikely because he's been a long time out of the ring. But what do you think the likelihood is that they might do a replacement for The Miz?
I mean, it's going to be weird, isn't it, if they do that, because he's a tag champ. It's not like he's one of the contenders. You can just swap it out. It's like one of your champions isn't available. So I don't even know what the official rulings would be, you know, if they were actually to lean into whatever them rulings should be, if it was a real thing. But just to insert someone else, I don't know. But I mean, I would love to see Joey Mercury and a little M&M reunion, only, you know, without Melina.
Yeah, it would be nice to see, just for a bit of nostalgia. I think, again, it would be a very good move for WWE if they had to do something, but very unlikely to happen. And again, this is purely speculative. Whilst we're hearing about these isolations and these, you know, these wrestlers who are currently unable to participate, we don't know whether their segments have already been filmed. So we don't know whether he's going to be out of Mania, as it were, or whether they've already filmed it. So technically, he's still part of it. He's just not going to be, you know, allowed to leave his home by the time Mania hits, you know what I mean? So it'd be interesting to see what actually comes forward as matches that they've already taped, because this is all, stuff that's getting leaked out. No one from the WWE is officially announcing stuff just yet. So we'll see what happens there, really. But, and again, they made no mention of it on SmackDown, and it was information that was available before SmackDown aired, so they could have put a mention out like, oh, unfortunately, The Miz, this and that. But they haven't, so it might be that they've already managed to film the tag match. And next I've got, here's a shocker for you, Carl. Jon Moxley made his WWE debut.
What?
Dean Ambrose made his return to WWE.
Orange, did you know about this?
Oh, you did? Okay.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. So, obviously, joking aside, this is just a little bit of a funny one, that Renee Young obviously is now having to film WWE backstage from a house along with the other hosts, and John Moxley had to come and collect the dog, so accidentally ended up in a shot in the background behind Renee to pick the dog up. So we saw John Moxley on WWE programming for the shock value of it. So
I wonder whether Renee will be in any hot water for that now. Like, I wonder whether it's pissed anyone off that's happened. Like, surely not. Do you know what I mean? But
it might piss Vince off, because you know what Vince is like. But at the same time, the WWE backstage is a Fox product. It's the reason they're able to have CM Punk on there. He's not contracted to WWE. He's contracted to Fox. So. Whilst WWE must have some level of approval to it, I don't think anyone can get pissed off about it per se, but knowing Vince McMahon, he probably is.
I secretly wish he had like ran in there with like an AEW t-shirt on or something.
That would have been really funny. I've heard rumours that Vince McMahon is actually pissed off with the dog, which makes a bit of sense.
apparently You heard the dog sneeze in the background, and he just went
exactly,
furious.
Yeah. And obviously, John Moxley quickly tried to deal with that situation, but to no avail. So yeah, just a bit of a funny one there. Sadly, the next one's not so funny, and it's that the AOP are out of action, which makes a bit of sense. You've probably seen that they're totally absent without really much explanation. They're not with Rollins now; they're just not around. The reason for that, weirdly, is that do you pronounce it Razor or is it Razar? I don't know. Anyway,
Razar, I think.
Razar is he's torn his right bicep, and he's currently having surgery. And weirdly, WWE, they won't be using Akeem without, again, I hope I pronounced that right, without his tag partner. So it's either the AOP or no one. So he's now basically on hiatus until Razar is able to wrestle again. But as you know, Carl, from bicep injuries, he'd be looking, what, approximately 8 months for recovery time? So
yeah,
it just puts the pair of them out unnecessarily when one of them... Rollins still could have had Akeem. Is it Akeem? Am I saying it right?
Yeah.
He could have still had Akeem there as a big bruiser, who's his bodyguard essentially. But they've just gone, no, we're not. It's either the authors of pain or none. So I don't know if they're going to stick to that, because 8 months seems like a long time to just not use somebody because his tag partner's not there.
I wonder like what the recency is of this of the injury, because I wonder whether he's actually had it for a little bit of time, and that's why they never ended up getting the tag titles, you know, in the first place, because we were quite critical of the fact that it was Rollins and Murphy who had them, and it should have been the AOP. But, you know, don't know how long Razor's been harboring this injury for, but it would make
That's
a bit of sense.
That's a fair point, yeah, because we're being told about the surgery element, but yeah, he could have been dealing with it for a little bit, couldn't he? Yeah, it's a fair point. But yeah, I mean, I hope him a speedy recovery, and I was backing them as people who should have been tag champs, so it is a real shame. And I don't want to say it like this, because I'm not being mean to him. I don't, you know, no one should have to go through those injuries, no one should have to have time out of work for that, but it's a blessing in disguise, because I genuinely want to see Rollins versus Owens with no fucking shenanigans, just them two having a
match. Amen.
Yeah. And it's almost forced, that situation. I know they could still throw Buddy Murphy in there, but let's face it, we're not going to, are we?
Fucking better not.
Fucking better not. So I'll move on to the next one. This one, Carl, I'm afraid you're going to have to get your tinfoil hat on for this one, because this is me speculating. This is me putting stuff together. It's a conspiracy. But basically, I'm seeing a lot of YouTube videos and articles on Vince McMahon has labelled Punk as the one person he'll never do business with, and that seems such a definite statement and sort of randomly out of nowhere that it makes me feel like they're deliberately saying that so it's more shocking when he comes back. And that's what I'm speculating. I reckon Punk's going to return. I think it'd be almost daft to have him return at Mania with no crowd and no pop. But the fact that I keep seeing things where they're saying Vince McMahon would never work with Punk just makes me think, well, he clearly is fucking going to then, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, with Vince McMahon, like, you never say never. There's been a million people who have burnt their bridges with WWE who've always ended up kind of getting back into bed together with them. So I don't know. It's an interesting one. I think the problem is that who's going to fucking care if CM Punk comes back now? He's just, you know, he's not even a hot act anymore. He left when he was, you know, on top of the wrestling business. He gave it all up, went out to be a UFC star, got twatted twice, came back to
that,
you know,
did not help.
a bit of a damp squib on, you know, backstage, you know, generated a bit of buzz, and then, you know, from what I hear, because I don't watch it, but he kind of comes across as a bit of an ass on the show anyway. So I feel like
not even on the show, he made some quite visceral remarks on Twitter as well. I can't even remember who it was to, but it was to one of the WWE stars saying that you should go and suck at blood. What was it? It was something about the Saudi money, like, you know, basically telling him to go suck a dick. But yeah, it was quite unnecessarily aggressive for the comment that was made, from what I gather. So he seems a bit of a dick in general, really. But he's always been rather hot-headed and rather opinionated, but it works when it's a character and you want to get behind the character. When he's just going around being a person, you know what I mean? In real life, it doesn't work as well. He's probably an unbearable person in real life. But there you go. But I honestly think that they're probably building to some sort of return because they're so... It just seems so sort of intentional to tell me that they're never going to work together. It's like, well, okay, I don't know why you feel the need to tell me that 10 years later. So I just wanted to mention that one. The next bit we've got is this Boneyard match, Carl. The Boneyard match. Apparently, a lot of people were like, what the fuck's a Boneyard match? So AJ Styles has sought to clarify it in some way. So we're not fully clear on the match because he was being still a bit vague, but he did make it clear that it was going to take place in a graveyard or cemetery, if you will, and that it's going to involve a grave. So it sounds essentially like an on-location buried live match. That's what I'm getting. However, and it doesn't add much, but AJ said expect some sort of surprises or unusual thing. You know what I mean? Like, don't expect it to be as straightforward as all that. So, you know, there's probably going to be something more to it that they're not giving away just yet. But, yeah, it seems they're just really desperately trying to avoid using the term graveyard or anything like that because it sounded a bit too dark, so it's a boneyard now. Well, it seems the thing that we've seen before is... I honestly worry now that they're going to do exactly what they did with Kane, and Kane has to bury The Undertaker for The Undertaker to come back properly as the dead man, and you're like, wait, what? Which worked with Kane because he was the American Badass when that happened. But with this one, it's going to be, well, he was already kind of the dead man. You brought him back from retirement to have a match with him, to bury him, to make him the dead man. So I hope they're not doing that. But just because he keeps calling him Mark and he keeps doing that bit, and then now suddenly it's like, well, yeah, we're going to have this match that is essentially a buried alive match. So I'd be interested to see where they're going with it. But that's pretty much what information we've been given about the Boneyard match.
I think for me, it just sounds hokey as fuck. Like, how are they going to turn that into a good match?
That's the thing. I think WrestleMania is probably going to end up being a bit Marmite here, to be honest. I think you're either going to love it or hate it, because there seems going to be a lot of on-location stuff. And again, it's kind of like the Matt Hardy stuff, where it's like, it either works or it doesn't, you know, and some people might love it. I think it's going to be very polarizing. I think you're going to have a lot of people, one half going, that was fucking brilliant, and another half going, it really wasn't. Sadly, I think, I don't want to speak for you, Carl, but I think both you and me are probably going to be in the camp of, no, that wasn't any good.
Yeah, it's a sad thought, isn't it, shall we say, for 36 WrestleManias having watched to maybe get to a point where one of them just doesn't feel like a WrestleMania.
Yeah, and sadly I don't think it is going to feel like one, but we'll still be there, we'll still be watching it, we'll still be supporting it, and we can only hope that things change soon. So I'll move on again while we're sort of touching on the subject of the COVID-19. Just a quick mention that apparently Daniel Bryan will be, and it'd be a difficult thing for him, and it's not really much of a news article, but just the fact that because he is going to be participating in Mania, he is apparently going to have to be isolated from his family until he can be tested and cleared, which makes a lot of sense because obviously his wife's heavily pregnant and he has a young daughter, I believe. So it makes sense that he's not going to, if the potential's there for him to be infected, he's not going to go and pass it around. But sadly, that'll mean he's going to be isolated for at least 7 days whilst the tester makes sure he's clear, which doesn't sound like a lot. But obviously, as you being a family man yourself, Carl, you'll know that that's quite a tough thing to do.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, much credit to him that he's playing it safe and having to be away from his family to do that. So, you know, fair enough to him.
Yeah, hopefully with the, you know, modern powers of technology, you can still video chat with Birdie and Brie, you know, stuff, but yeah, it would be hard being away from them for a week.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So just a quick mention on that one, really. Then we move on to, I don't know if you're aware of this one, Carl, Teddy Hart has been arrested.
Yeah, I heard.
Apparently, he's with, is it Maria Manic, I believe, Ring of Honor wrestler. And she has been his partner for some time, but his arrest was over a charge of strangulation against her, and he could be looking at 5 years in prison. Now, for those of you who are listening who are going, who's Teddy Hart? you might, he's not really had a big WWE career. Correct me if you disagree there, Cal. But you might remember him most notably from being part of the New Heart Foundation, when that was a thing, when Natalya was sort of getting that pop. He was a member of that, and he apparently, I don't know there's much truth to this because he has worked with WWE since that, but apparently he had a bit of an attitude problem, which is largely why he's not in WWE now. And I don't know if maybe he's a bit of a hothead in that sense, and maybe there is something there as to him having some sort of anger issues. I don't know, but yeah, he's potentially looking at 5 years in prison now, which is not, I mean, obviously we all know the Hart family. We probably don't know Teddy all too well, but we know the Hart family, so it's never a good thing to read.
No, it's a proper tale of tragedy with Teddy Hart. He is so athletically gifted and talented. I remember, it's probably going on 10 years ago now, seeing him on the indies doing, you know, some serious flippy shit before flippy shit was cool. Like, this guy was doing like 900 degree flips and crazy stuff like that. You know, it wasn't fully technical like your standard Hart, but, you know, he did train in the Hart dungeon. You know, he's basically the son of Georgia Hart, so basically he's Stu's grandson. He's Brett's uncle.
Brett's nephew, yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, he is really talented. He just has never been able to get out of his own way. This isn't the first kind of battle he's had with the law. And as you've said, he is a hothead. He has, you know, been done for battery and for drugs and for, you know, intoxication, everything. And it's just a shame, because if you've, you know, removed the attitude and the mental side of it, you know, as a performer, he was very, very gifted, and it was the only thing that ever kind of stood in his way of being someone, really. So it's a real shame. It would be, you know, I'd love to kind of go back and actually, if all that stuff wasn't, you know, didn't get him, then to see what kind of career he would have had.
Yeah, definitely. It is a real shame, and hopefully, you know, he might come out of the other side of it a better person. But sadly, his history so far seems to be that he might have sort of ruined his own career, really. I don't think, and again, I don't know how true it is, but that seems to be the reason he's not with WWE. And I don't know whether that's a permanent ban per se, because they don't really say a lot on stars that aren't that big. You know, it's not really newsworthy when he leaves. But yeah, apparently he had a proper attitude problem in the WWE. So again, I don't know whether that might sort of reflect as to his attitude in general. And he's probably, assuming he doesn't get too long a prison time, he might have fucked his own career here with this one, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then the last one I've got is that it's actually further to, we mentioned last week about Braun Strowman making some remarks about indie wrestlers and how they should basically go and make some money then. Essentially, being a bit of a twat, and I think you remember you saying that he seems to have a bit of an attitude on him, and we discussed on some level about the person he seems to be is probably not a very nice person. So apparently, some of the people he is friends with in the WWE fully understand the plight of the indie wrestler, and have explained that to him. And as a result of them explaining that to him, he has actually issued an apology for his comments.
Okay.
Which, fair play to him, that's big enough for him to do. Bear in mind, this man stuck to his guns for nearly a week. He blocked people who would argue with him or whichever, and he was very much like, I'm in the right, they should just deal with it. And I don't know, they haven't actually said who it is who's educated him, but he has since apologised because he's been made aware of the difficulty for wrestlers on the indie scene, especially those who aren't like well known in WWE, which he is. He's from a point of privilege, isn't he? He's fairly high up in the biggest promotion in the world, so he's talking from a different position. And you know, I'll give him credit for apologising, but basically I think someone's turned around and gone, Braun, you're being a dickhead there, and he's gone, probably. But what do you make of that one?
I think from, I saw a couple of notes on it, and I think it sounded like, I think he was quoted as, he sort of gets it. So I still don't think he fully, you know, I don't think he cares. I think he's just being told to apologize.
Yeah, for me, I think That's what I think someone's gone, no, you're being a tit, and he's sort of has to apologise. I think he probably does understand it a bit better now, but like you say, the sort of, I suppose, the backhanded element that you've mentioned there of him saying he sort of understands it probably suggests that he still wants to stick to his guns, but probably feels more compelled not to because he's realised he's coming under fire for it.
Yeah.
Mm. But like you say, it's just, it seems to be him in his nature, doesn't it?
I know. Hopefully he, because I don't think he's even that old, so hopefully he'll just get, you know, a bit more mature as he stays in the business, and hopefully, you know, he does have a good career, and kind of gets that maturity aspect of it, you know, grows that in that capacity.
Yeah, that's a good point, Braun. If you're listening, instead of, you know, getting these hands, maybe get that maturity. Just a thought. So, Carl, I'm looking forward to our third segment. Sorry, I won't jump. Right. Orange, do you have any news that you want to bring to the table? Okay. Leave it at that. Don't, you know, only chatting, you know, you're off, you know. Carl, do you have any news you want to bring to the table?
I mean, I think you've pretty much covered everything. The only small tidbit I had was a tweet from Jake Roberts that came out today. I don't know if you saw it.
I haven't.
So he basically tweeted, it's getting tough being alone all the time. The hotel room keeps shrinking. I'm jealous of all those with family or partners. I'm still sober. So I just, you know what I mean? I just...
That's heavy.
I hope he stays strong because he's done such a fantastic job to pull himself out of a really dark place, you know. And
and genuinely, and I mean this with utter sincerity, I'm not trying to take the piss in any way, it was fantastic to see him clean and see him so on form when he returned. When he came to AEW and he cut his promo and he was awesome. And it was so great to see that. And you know, I want him to at least take that. Not that he's going to listen to our podcast, but I want him to at least take that from it, is that the fans are out there and they love seeing him where he is and seeing him back. And, you know, he's got to try and keep his head straight, especially right now, you know.
Well, that's it. When there's not a whole hell of a lot going on in the world, it's hard to distract your demons. So
it is.
When you're kind of stuck in a hotel room on your own, you know, boredom creeps in and other thoughts will be creeping in. You know, must be really difficult for him. So, you know, hopefully he'll get through this. And, you know, if anyone does listen to this, I think, you know, go and offer him a couple of words of encouragement, especially for the work he's been doing of late on Dynamite. And, you know, just help him through this because he's done such a good job. And, you know, let's make sure he comes out of it still sober, still clean.
And again, anyone who is listening, I'm sure we're going to offer our encouragement at some point as well. We do attack the social medias, don't we, Carl?
Yes, we do.
So we're certainly going to be on there. I'm not much of a social media guy myself, but I'm inspired by this tweet. I wasn't aware of it, but I certainly want to sort of go on there and offer some encouragement. It's awesome to see him back. So yeah, definitely. If you are listening and you want to do that, definitely get on there. Right. So I think, should we move on to our third segment, Carl?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. So, as our listeners should well know by now, this segment is an ever-changing segment. This week, I thought it'd be fun to do the 10 most, or either worst / most memorable botches that we've seen. And it sort of come to my mind because, as I mentioned to Carl earlier, because everything's so pre-taped, we're not really going to see any botches for a while because they can just refilm it and pretend it never happened. So, I figured it'd be fun if me and Carl earlier agreed to do 5 each, and then I think there's a few honourable mentions as well that Carl's put out because you are an absolute beacon of information, Carl, and you probably had about 20 that you could list off the top of your head. So I limited you to 5 because your knowledge is much better than mine. So do you want to run through your 5 and I'll do mine, and then we can go through any honourable mentions after that?
Yeah, defo. Sounds good. So my first one, I think, is absolutely god tier from a botch perspective, is when Vince McMahon tears both his quads. So if you've not seen this, anyone who is listening, so we're looking back to the 2005 Royal Rumble, So the final two participants in that match are John Cena and Batista. And supposedly, they botched the finish. So it should have been a win for Batista, who goes to dump John Cena out via like a Batista bomb. But it looks like Cena's like legs got caught around Batista, and both of them just so happened to fall out at the same time. So the referees are all outside at ringside. They haven't got a fucking idea what to do. So they're all kind of, you can see them even speaking in the headsets, just kind of saying, what do we do? What do we do? So then they both kind of go with the, okay, well, I think this guy won. I think that guy won. That's when Vince McMahon, like a fucking banshee, you know, comes flying down the aisle like a fucking madman. He is fuming. Rips his jacket off, throws it on the floor. You've never seen Vince McMahon in your life look any angrier than this moment. So you can see the looks of the face. So you know it's we're talking 2005. So both Batista and Cena, to a degree, you know, they're not seasoned fucking veterans at this point either. So you can see both of them are shitting their pants. And Vince, you know, runs, slides into the ring, and you know they're about to get an absolute fucking lashing. When he goes to stand up and both of his legs just buckle and he falls onto his ass. and it's just one of the most surreal things you've ever seen in your life, to go from, you know, fuming to just old man who can't stand up. And he's just sat there, both of his hands on his hip. And, you know, fair play to Vince. He no-sold it like a fucking champ. He's just ripped both of his quads and he can't stand up.
And yeah, he should be in unbearable pain right there.
And he sat there just looking up at these two men that he was about to scream at with his hands on his hips. And yeah, it is God tier botch. And I don't think you'll ever find anything like it. And
I want to, it's insanely memorable. Like, it really is, and you can still quite easily find it on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth a watch. And to be honest, the botch before it is so strange. Like, what are the odds that they both land at the same time? Because you can watch it back as much as you like. They both land. You couldn't do it deliberately. Do you know what I mean? That wasn't a deliberate thing. That's got to have been a botch, because there's no way you could land that perfectly at the same time.
That's it. Like, they've tried to do these as angles in the past, and you know, someone's always like feet have touched first, and there's no way. But they both just dump out like a you know, two sacks of shit, and land there simultaneously on the floor. So I don't know. I mean, there'd be cynics out there who say it was planned all along, but the supposed story is that the finish was botched. But yeah, Vince must absolutely cringe now watching that back. He probably wants all that footage destroyed. But if you've not seen it's fantastic. It is cringeworthy to fuck, but it is such an amazing botch. So that's my number one. Second is also God tier when it comes to botches, and that is the debut of the Shockmaster. So, you know, we go back a little bit further for this one. So I think it's WCW's Clash of the Champions back in 1993. So Ric Flair at the time had a little talk show, like wrestlers tend to do for whatever reason over the years. And they're building towards an upcoming War Games match. And you've got Sting and British Bulldog, who are the guests on the show. And Sid Vicious, and I think it's a Harlem Heat, come out and like basically saying, well, you know, who's your partner? Who's your partner? And so Bulldog says, okay, I'll let Sting tell you. And Sting is like, well, you will be shocked at who our new partner is. And so basically this whole segment is to unveil who their mystery partner is. You know, at the time, there's a guy called Fred Ottman, so formerly known in the WWF as Tugboat, or, you know, you might remember him as Typhoon, one half of the tag team, the Natural Disasters with the Earthquake. But he was quite a hot commodity, really, and his WWF contract had come up for expiration. So he was going to be given quite a big role. You know, he's getting put in there with Bulldog and Sting, Sid Vicious and the Harlem Heat, who were really big at that time. So the plan was, when they say it's the Shockmaster, there was going to be like a little explosion. He was going to come bursting through the wall and be like this big intimidating presence. And what actually happened was he fucking fell ass over tit. through the wall and just landed on his face. And at the time, for whatever reason, they thought it would be a good idea for him to have a glittered stormtrooper mask helmet thing on. And obviously, as he goes arse over tit, that mask goes flying off. So he's got this big fat bastard lying on the floor trying to scramble around to pull his mask back on. And you literally hear, like, really faint in the background of Ric Flair go, oh God. And honestly, it's so bad. But yeah, so he did go on to have that match, but he was sort of repackaged beforehand. So he was still referred to as the Shockmaster, but he kind of came out as like this builder slash electrician, like a hard hat on. So,
fair enough.
Yeah, and he slowly disappeared after that match. But yeah, very memorable. And then next on my list, memorable for all the wrong reasons, was the unfortunate leg break of Sid.
One was disgusting, man.
Yeah, if you squeamish, I recommend not looking this up. But this happened at the WCW Sin pay-per-view in 2001. Now, Sid has always been one of the top guys in the business. You know, he main evented with the likes of Hogan at Mania. He's had matches with Undertaker, won the WWF title off Shawn Michaels. Like, he's always been a big star. And, you know, he's never been good on the mic. You know, there's a million other botches we could have put on here. I can think of about three or four off the top of my head of where he just absolutely fucks up on the mic. But this particular one, you know, he's been plagued with injuries throughout his career. You know, he's had a pretty rough run, and he'd been WWF, WCW, back to WWF, and he was, you know, they kind of gave up on him, and he was kind of on the indies, ECW, and then WCW gave him another shot. So they brought him back in, and he wasn't quite as over as he was, but he was still pretty over at the time. And he was in this match with Scott Steiner, and the plan was they were going to have Rick Steiner run in, and so they set this spot up, and they said to Sid, so what we want you to do is get on the turnbuckle and jump off and just give him like a kick. And Sid was like, well, hang on, I don't jump off the turnbuckle. I'm a big guy. I don't do this kind of high flying stuff. And he tried to get out of it. He didn't want to do it. But whoever was the road agent at the time basically said, well, we've got it already planned in now that, you know, we've got the camera angles right, so that once you've jumped off there, we're going to bring in Rick Steiner. And so, against his will, Sid agrees to it, and it's only on the second rope, and the plan was he's going to jump off and give this big boot to Scott Steiner, but, you know, Sid's 300 pounds trying to jump on, and let's be honest, he was a bodybuilder, and he didn't do leg day, he skipped leg day, which, you know, has come back to bite him on the ass, because as he jumped off that second rope, he landed on his left leg, and his leg went completely the other way, and it's gory, like it is.
It was disgusting to watch. It really was.
And like, you know, it's horrible to think about it, but it pretty much ended his career. That he never came back. It was so gruesome. I think
it was a hell of a break, though.
Yeah, honestly, he was done at that point. I think he managed to come back for one match on, you know, a WWE Raw, like about 5 or 6 years ago or something, just as like, so he could have a match, you know, and go out on his terms. But yeah, fucking hell, it was the end of him, that. So definitely sick.
And obviously for Morbid Curiosity, again, it's another one you can find on YouTube, although I don't know if you'd want to.
Yeah, viewer discretion advised. And then number four for me was the Brock Lesnar shooting star. So WrestleMania 19, which I'll go on record as saying is one of the best manias of all time, in my opinion, was headlined by Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle. So as you would expect, this was an absolute clinic. You got two big, pure wrestling beasts in there. Absolute clinic of a match. I think, you know, screw Suplex City, this was Suplex Country. Like, Angle was throwing suplexes out, Lesnar was throwing suplexes out. All in all, it was just a fantastic match.
And as you say, I mean, they've both got like legitimate wrestling backgrounds, the pair of them, haven't they? One's an Olympian, the other one's got a hell of an amateur wrestling career. So it was always going to be a great match to watch. And to be fair, they always put on good matches together, the pair of them, didn't they?
Well, that's it. They had that respect with each other as well, and they'd all, you know, they'd sell very well for each other, and they'd do anything for each other in the ring. So you knew it was going to be good, and just for that extra bit of, you know, delight, if you will, with it being WrestleMania season, they decided that they were going to revive an old spot that Brock Lesnar used to do, which was a shooting star press. So you might look at Brock and think, what the fuck? Which at the time, when he got up on the top rope, many people around the world did think, what the fuck? But back in the day, his OVW days, when he was in a tag team, the Minnesota Stretching Crew with Shelton Benjamin, he used to do it quite regularly. But it had been quite a while since he did it. So, you know, if you hadn't guessed already from hearing the stuff we just spoke about with Sid, it's not the best idea to get big men jumping off the top of ropes. And unfortunately, he attempted it, but he didn't really get full rotation and pretty much just landed square on his head and kind of Angle's ribs at the same time. I think he actually might have broke some of Angle's ribs in this. But if you watch it back, you can clearly see he lands on his own head, and you can tell he's concussed to fuck. He's concussed the fucking life out of himself. And you can see he looks up, his eyes are all glazed over, he's got no idea where he was, his nose is bleeding, and he's just like, he's like an animal, he's just panting and like grunting. He manages to finish the match. And you know, it'll still go down as one of the best WrestleMania matches of all time, but oh my god, that was just something else, that botch. And I believe once he got to the back, there was about 20 road agents who had to try and like restrain him, because he had such a severe concussion, he just started going mental and like trying to wreck the place and just like throwing things and everything. So
crazy,
like, crazy when you've got someone the size of Brock Lesnar doing that. But
yeah.
What's
I remember seeing this, and like you say, it's I get why they wanted to do it. It is a shocking move, and it was something he could pull off or has pulled off, and you don't expect it. Like, everyone was in a bit of shock when he went to the top rope, and it's a shame it didn't land. But yeah, it was you could see he was out of it. Fair play to them both for finishing, because they did finish the match. But yeah, it again, another one. It's a bit of a must see that in some respects.
Yeah, and I think my last one. So you know. As you mentioned, Anthony, I was trying to whittle this list down, but I wanted to put because I think the other ones I've mentioned, you know, many people might have already heard of them or seen them. Like, a lot of them are, you know, very famous botches, if you will. But this last one was just one that I've always just found really funny. So just a basic episode of Raw, and you had Lillian Garcia was the announcer at the time, and do you remember Charlie Haas?
I do, yeah. He was part of the, what were they called?
The World's Greatest Tag Team.
World's Greatest Tag Team, that was it. Yeah, he was with Shelty B, wasn't he?
He was. So around this time is when, I think it was after the draft or something, and he must have got split up from Shelty B. So he was trying to make it as a single star, and he wasn't really getting over. So he was on just one of the, you know, the filler matches, like the bathroom break matches. I think he might be fighting Joey Mercury or someone like that. But basically, Charlie Haas is like trying to get recognized, trying to get himself over. So as Lillian's announcing him, he like sprints down to the ring, like he sprints down to the ring and decides he's going to run and bounce off the ropes a couple of times, a little bit Ultimate Warrior-esque. Meanwhile, Lillian Garcia hasn't fully got out the ring, so she's just like partway out the ring as he bounces off the rope, and he fucking launches her flying onto the floor, like off camera, and so we can't see what's happened, but we can see it that she's kind of fell. But all you can hear is it sounds like she's just being fucking murdered at ringside. She is literally screaming. She's like, ah! It's like, honestly, the screams of like terror. I honestly thought that like she was being murdered, like someone stabbing her or something. But I think basically all that happened was she might have sprained her wrist
when she fell.
Obviously, the commentary team aren't saying anything about it because they don't want to draw attention to it. But this match is like about to go underway, and you can just hear Lillian Garcia just screaming the fucking house down. So yeah, I've always thought it was really funny. But what made it funnier as well is they then tried to build off this for Charlie Haas. It just goes to show that he had nothing for him. They tried to turn it into like a bit of an angle where, you know, Charlie Haas was a bad guy and you know, he meant it or something. It was like, well, obviously he fucking didn't, but, you know, it was meant to get him over as a bad guy, but I think he just did the opposite because everyone thought Lillian was a fucking bitch for, you know, like screaming like a little bitch for flat, just falling and spraining her wrist. So Yeah, it's another one. I don't know whether it is on YouTube because it's so obscure, but definitely worth a scour.
If you can find it, definitely worth a nose here.
But it's just so funny. Just Lillian Garcia, just what a little bitch.
Right, so I'll do my five then, if we're good with that. So I'll start with, and I think we've already had a little bit of a pre-discussion here, Carl, so I know that you might have a little bit of debate on this one. So my first one, my number one, is Taker versus Mankind. So this was King of the Ring 98, Carl. I'll take you back to 1998 in a Hell in a Cell. Now, obviously, we had a few big spots from the lunatic that is Mankind. But the botch I'm referring to is the fact that following, I believe it was a chokeslam, on the top of the cell, the roof of the cell gave way and plummeted Mankind all the way back down to the ring apron. And basically, it was one of them moments. And it was that sort of shock value to it, and the fact that you had like Jim Ross and like saying like basically he's dead, and you genuinely like fuck, because you just didn't expect the roof of the cage to give way like that. I don't even think it needs to say, if you can find it, have a look, you will find it. It's one of the most notorious things that Mankind's ever done, really. But I know you had a few comments on this earlier, didn't you, Carl? So I said we'll talk about it at the time. So what are your thoughts on this one?
So I don't know whether it's just my cynicism, but I don't think that I think that cage, the roof of that cage was meant to break. I think at the time Mick Foley was getting a bit of, you know, shit off his wife in real life for doing things that were too crazy, and she was getting to the point where she was like signing off on stuff almost, of like stuff she would allow him to do. And I think he basically said that this was a botch, so that he didn't get shouted at by his missus. but the reason I think it is because they were doing a lot of stuff on top of that roof, and they purposefully avoided that one bit of the roof. So I feel like it was probably already primed to give way. But one thing that I think definitely was a botch was, for whatever reason, I think Taker put a steel chair down there or something, and fucking Foley falls through, obviously heavier than the chair, so he lands, then all of a sudden the chair fucking carries on, twats him in the back of the head as well. Just to add further insult to injury. Yeah, so but yeah, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I just like the cynic in me seems to think that
I can appreciate that, mate. I mean, you've been in the wrestling game for a long time, so I appreciate your cynicism on that, and it might be that this is actually just a really good work rather than a botch. But I'm always a big fan of audience participation, so if you're listening and you do want to check out the videos and leave a comment to us as to whether you think this was, in fact, a work, you know, we'd always be interested in hearing from you. I'll move on to my next one. Now, this one was definitely a botch. So, Carl, I'm going to take you over to SummerSlam 1997, and I'll take you to a match of Owen Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I'm going to take you to a incredibly botched pile driver that's resulted in Austin. Now, I do want to mention this, actually, because at the time, and it's always well noted, that basically, due to the botch of the pile driver, Owen Hart broke Austin's neck. And then Austin is a tough son of a bitch because he finished the match and got the pin. And this is ultimately the injury that ended Austin's career. But I'm given to understand that he didn't actually break his neck. It was a bad injury, by all means, and it was the career-ending injury for him, but it wasn't actually a broken neck. Yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts or any further detail on that one, Carl. But yeah, this is it's a sickening one to see. I don't know if you can see it now, actually. I've not been able to. I've been looking today, actually, because I knew we were doing this, and I couldn't find the footage. But again, it's you can clearly see it. It obviously just lands straight on his head, and it obviously. He is, no matter what the injury was, he's a tough bastard, because he did carry on, and I believe he suffered a small level of paralysis. Obviously, that he got the feeling back, but I believe he suffered a small level of paralysis afterwards as well, not to be carried back to the backstage.
I think it is it's crazy, really, to think of how that all went down. So, I mean, I don't know whether it was officially a break. I think he gets the broken skull ranch thing from that injury. So I don't know whether he had like a some sort of fracture or a break in his neck or his skull or whatever it was, but you know, it was severe enough where he couldn't kind of feel his limbs. I think I remember him, I've heard him say.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was Owen Hart who did it as well, now, you know, it's crazy for anyone from the Hart family to ever fuck something up or to be responsible for hurting anyone. I know Brett always said that he's never hurt anyone in the wrestling business, because he'd always try his best to take care of people, because he wasn't like a stiff worker. That's why he doesn't like Goldberg as a prime example. But you know, Owen Hart was another fantastic wrestler, so it's crazy that it was him. And you know, everyone knows Owen Hart was like at a heart of gold, and everyone, you know, knows him for being this really nice guy. But I believe Owen never apologized to Austin for this.
Oh, really?
Which I think is just crazy, really. But yeah, apparently he never offered an apology. He just never said anything about it ever again, which if it's true, then it is crazy. But yeah, as you've said, this injury, you know, basically stopped pile drivers being used in the WWE for a very long time. I mean, they're not even used today, really. You've got the tombstone that gets used, but you know, that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a weird one as well, because I've cited it a couple of times there as the you know, the injury that ultimately put Stone Cold out. But obviously he did come back for a while after his recovery, after the injury. But I believe it was complications due to this one that ultimately retired him. And sadly, and I've not got it on my list. I don't know if it ended up in the mentions, but obviously Owen Hart suffered one of the worst botches of all, which ultimately took his life, which I won't go into too much detail on that, but very sad end for Owen as well. So, and it's one of them where you think, well, sadly, there'd never be any closure to that, really, would there?
No.
Right, so the next one I'll move on to, which is luckily, to be honest, none of mine are lighthearted. I do apologise for that. One of them is lighthearted. The next one I've got is the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view of 2010, Carl, which we see the Undertaker come out with some nice pyro effects from fire being shot out. You know, you might recall that. And what you might also recall is one of those fireballs hitting the Undertaker directly in the chest and ultimately setting fire to him, which I shouldn't laugh at. But obviously Undertaker, being the tough bastard that he is, as a lot of the wrestlers were from that era, carries on down to the ring, albeit at a quicker pace than he normally does. And he douses himself with water and cracks on with the entire match, to be fair. But again, if you can see the pyro botch, which you can find on YouTube, or you can see the match itself, you can see that he's suffering, and he's suffering through the match. And it's one of them where it's like I imagine someone got sacked for that. But you know, fair play to the Undertaker for being tough enough to fucking carry on. I believe the water element was key at that point, because he was dousing himself with it as well.
Yeah, fucking hell. I can't remember whether we might have actually watched this together. I don't know whether we watched it live, but I'm pretty sure we've watched this together at some point.
We did. I don't think it was live. I think it was after the fact, but we've definitely watched this bit together.
Because I remember us laughing just at the fact that he's obviously doing his slow dead man walk, and then he just does this little little
fucking pace. Yeah,
does this little run. He's very angry. He starts ripping his fucking coat off and everything, doesn't he? You can tell he's fuming. But the one thing that I always remember from that match is how progressively redder he gets as the match goes on.
Oh yeah, that's the funny thing. But I think it's funny as well, like he's clearly pissed off, and you know, this is something that happened in reality. But then you go, kayfabe wise, I mean, he left his brother to burn in a house, you know.
Karma.
Blatantly stealing Kane's gimmick for this match, I believe.
Well, he was the fucking big red machine by the end of it, I tell you.
He fucking was. Again, that's another one. I know it's not, you know, Undertaker, you're my favourite wrestler, and I don't want you to have got burnt, and you know, I have sympathy in that sense, but at the same time, it is kind of funny, especially to watch you carry on with the match. So again, if you can find the match on YouTube, certainly have a nosy, it's well worth a look. Now, this is probably my funniest one, and I don't know if you remember this, Carl, It was roughly January 2006, just an episode of SmackDown. Weirdly, back when SmackDown used to put some bigger matches on. And we saw it was Batista, I think it was Batista and Rey Mysterio versus Eminem in a cage match for some reason. Which, again, sounds a little bit vague, but basically the context of who was in the cage match doesn't really matter. What matters is there was a bit of a rivalry with Mark Henry and Batista at the time. So Mark Henry storms out to the steel cage, and I believe the intent was that the cage was meant to be rigged in some capacity. So he comes out and he just starts tugging on the side of the cage, and nothing happens. So he goes around to the other side, tugs on the cage, and nothing happens. And there's just a solid couple of awkward minutes where nothing's really happening, and Batista's in there sort of antagonizing him, and he can't get into the cage. And then ultimately one of the referees indicates to him to go for the chain on the door, which Mark does, and breaks the chain off the door, comes in, and does like a bit of a limp kick to Batista, and that's about it. He just shoved him, actually. I don't even think it was much. But yeah, it's just, the reason I like this botch is just because it's so funny to watch, because he was the world's strongest man. I think the intent was that he was meant to come and rip the side off the cage or something, and it just totally fucked up. And I don't know what went wrong, whether Mark was just confused as to what the spot was that he was looking for, or whether he was always meant to go for the door. I really don't know. But it's just a funny one to watch, just that really awkward few minutes where he just can't get in. It's fantastic.
So, I do vaguely. So, was it the chain he ended up pulling off in the end because he couldn't get it all?
Yeah, he ended up pulling off the chain, yeah.
I think, in fairness to him, if that wasn't the bit that was meant to be rigged, then he's fucking hell, he's done a good job to fucking break a chain.
what I'd never know, this is the bit I'm curious on. I never know if it's true that, I don't know whether the rig was the chain and he was always just meant to come in, rip the chain off and strut in like he was a badass, or whether he ended up having to break the chain and he is genuinely a really strong, bad guy, and he just was able to rip a steel chain into bits because he needed to get in. I really don't know, but my honest belief is that the chain was the rigged element, and Mark was confused. I'll be honest with you, I think he thought he was going to rip some sort of panel off or something, and really he was just meant to come and just yank the chain. That's what I think.
Maybe it wasn't rigged at all and they were just yanking his chain.
Hey. Well, yeah, it's a funny one to see anyway, and it is. I saw this again this morning, so it's definitely one you can find on YouTube. Well worth a chuckle. Sadly, I'm gonna lower the tone a little bit again and go to a bit more of a bit of depression one, but I think it's a notable botch. And this is, we're talking again an episode of SmackDown, the 5th of October 1999. Carl, I know you'll remember that one quite well. No,
nope.
nobody does. Now, this one actually didn't go to air, but it became quite noticed because this was back when SmackDown was being taped. So it was in front of a live audience, so a lot of people saw it happen, but never actually made it to the taped element. And that is basically, there was a match between D'Lo Brown and Droz, who you actually mentioned last week when we were talking about the movies, funnily enough, in which he was one of the people being auditioned, as it were, for Vince. So basically there was a spot in the match where D'Lo had Droz up for a powerbomb, and through Droz's own admission, he said he was wearing a loose shirt and it was not easy for D'Lo to get any sufficient grip, and basically he's gone to do the powerbomb and he's sort of landed it wrong and ultimately fractured two vertebrae in Droz's neck, and sadly, very sadly, left him a quadriplegic. And that was the end of Droz's career, really. And to be fair to him, you know, he's been spoke to about the incident since and the like, and he holds no ill will to D'Lo Brown. Apparently, they're still really good friends, and he understands that, you know, this is the business and these sort of things happen. But again, sadly, it's not the best one to end on, so I'm glad we're doing honourable mentions, but... again, quite a sickening botch, and I don't know if you'll be able to find the footage because it was never actually aired on TV, but I believe there are ways to find it on the old internet. Whether you have to go through the dark web, I don't know, but yeah, it's out there. have you ever actually managed to see this footage, Cal?
No, I've never seen it. I've seen, obviously, interviews and stuff with Droz after the fact and things, but Yeah, it's such a shame, really, because as you mentioned, obviously we saw him on the Beyond the Mat movie of being auditioned by Vince to get his big TV break, and that must have only been like 98 or something like that. I think this happened in 99, so he definitely didn't have the longest of careers, really.
Yeah, 99 it was, yeah.
Yeah, so
Oh.
shame.
It is a real shame. So to change the tone a little bit to end on a high note, do you want to go through some honorable mentions, Carl? Because I know you had a good few.
Yeah, so I think as Anthony mentioned, for whatever reason, when he brought this topic up as something we should look at for this segment, a lot of bad shit came to my head. I don't know whether that's a good thing or not, or I could quite easily recite things, botches and whatnot. So we've obviously gone through our top 10 now, but the honourable mentions was just a couple of other little tidbits. So one of the ones was that time Lita attempted a suicide dive on Raw. So I don't know whether you remember this one, and
I actually don't. It might come back to me when you explain it, but I don't recall this particular botch, I'll be honest.
so I think she might have been fighting Trish or someone like that, as she probably always was around this time. But she decided to do like your standard suicide dive through the ropes, and she just absolutely fucked it. And again, it was like landed on her neck, but in such a way where she landed face first, and the whole back of her body came over the other side of it.
Oh,
I literally watched it, and like I thought she was fucking paralyzed like from seeing it. But like luckily she just obviously ended up being okay. But like if I'm sure it's around there on YouTube today, but it's still to this day it's worse than the Brock Lesnar one. It is one of the worst like fucking botches I've ever seen in my life, but she was all right.
yeah,
Yeah,
cracking,
like
cracking,
crazy, but yeah.
yeah.
Could have gone so much worse, but yeah, I don't think she attempted any other suicide dives after that, to be fair to her.
No. It's a dangerous one to do it, especially if that's enough of a scare to put you off in it, let's be honest.
Yeah. And then one of the other ones, obviously a bit more of a somber note, was I remember watching the episode of Raw when Jerry the King Lawler had his heart attack.
Oh yeah.
That was fucking hard to watch, like
Yeah.
because it
One
was.
thing I will say, sorry, before you get into it, Carl, is much credit to Michael Cole. On that day. I don't often give him credit, but much credit to him on that day.
Yeah, I mean, how difficult must it be to be sat there next to your colleague who's starting to breathe really heavily, and you're kind of looking at him saying, "Why aren't you saying your lines?" And then the next minute he just collapses on the floor, and meanwhile you're on a live broadcast and you've got to somehow attend to him while also still commentating. Do you know what I
Oh,
mean?
yeah.
And yeah, it's a scary time really for old Jerry Lawler. I think he might have had a couple of heart attacks now in his life, but he's still with us, still
Yeah.
loving the puppies.
Still doing contract signings for
Well,
sure.
yeah, there you go. So,
Oh
but yeah, that one was definitely a scary one. But
yeah.
the perils of live TV to try and keep going through that, as you said, fair
Absolutely.
play.
No, a testament to Cole, because he was clearly shook after the fact as well. He's not just a colleague, he's a friend, and he had to carry on, and he did a stellar job. So again, I don't have to give him credit, but yeah, I'll give him credit for that day. I really will.
Yeah, and then the next one was at one of the Saudi shows, as many people will probably be familiar with. It was when Titus went world slide.
I remember this one. That was funny as fuck, that.
This was just brilliant. Was this before or after he killed everything with Vince McMahon?
I think this was before,
Was it?
Yeah, I think this
It
was
was.
like an embarrassing moment, and then he just, yeah, it just got worse.
I was gonna say like it, and you'd kind of wished it would have been the other way around, but he has this moment, and he's gone from being part of the fucking primetime players or whatever he was, just not really doing anything, kind of seen as a bit of a joke, to taking this botch and kind of turning it into a bit of an angle. Titus Worldwide becomes Title World Slide, and people got behind it. It still gets replayed like every Royal Rumble season now, and I think he's got that moment for life, really. He'll always be featured
Oh
on
yeah.
everything.
No, that is a fair point. It's never forgotten, is it? It'll always be featured.
I mean, he's lucky really that there were no fucking ladder matches or something planned for that night, otherwise
I
he
know.
wouldn't have been sliding under
That's the funny thing. It'd be
that
excellent,
ring.
wouldn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Jesus. But yeah, that one deserves an honourable mention. The next one to another big guy, the not the biggest of brains, was the great Carly. So
the great Carly.
I can't remember exactly what battle royal it was, but there was a battle royal that happened, and the great Carly is never really been the best, has he, when he comes to knowing what he's meant to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, he's never been the best in a wrestling sense at all. It's just because he's massive.
Yeah.
If we're honest, you know.
So he was in this battle royal, and, you know, as we know, the rules for battle royal is you must be thrown over the top rope to be eliminated. And he just, in the middle of the match, decides, because he's a big guy, to step over the top rope, as you do, and jump off the apron, and thus eliminating himself from the battle royal. To which they all shit themselves and go, no, get back in, get back in. So they just don't mention it when he gets back in the ring, only to, around 5 or 10 minutes later, do exactly the same thing again. And at this point, they're like, okay, yeah, you have to go. you can't make it up.
It's unreal, isn't
it? Hilarious. Yeah. Next one was for Matt Hardy. So way before he was Broken Matt, he was Matt Hardy version one, and he had protege with him, Shannon Moore, and they used to do this thing when they came out to the ring. So you'd walk down with the pretty kick-ass music, if you remember.
Oh yeah,
you can slap a tornado. You can slap a tornado. They come down to the ring. They both go towards the ropes and like stand on them together and like do the version one symbol, and Matt Hardy goes over and stands on it, and then as Shannon Moore goes to do it as well, he accidentally sends Matt Hardy ass over tit, and he falls over the rope and just strangles himself on one of the ropes on his way out, and just lands in a heap on the floor. And meanwhile, Shannon Moore's looking down on him like, oh shit.
Sorry.
Because it was like their taunt or whatever that they do, like as they're making their entrance, the camera's right on him. He's looking at it doing his version one and just fucking literally just collapses. And you know, he's in good humor and good spirits about it at the end, but
he's not the type of guy, Matt, is he? But it's all good as fuck, that, especially when it's Shannon who's done it, because he was obviously the newbie and the green one there.
Yeah.
But funny as fuck.
Yeah, so funny. And then the second to last one I've got is do you remember this one?
I distinctly remember this one, but go on.
So it's like a backstage segment, and I think it's there's Edge, there's Rey Mysterio, and I'm not sure, is the other one maybe Batista or something like that?
I'm confident it was Batista and Edge having a conversation and Rey in the background on it.
Yeah, and so there's the two guys at the front having a conversation, Edge and some other guy, and Rey Mysterio is deciding to do some chin ups on the locker room section.
It was like one of the shelves in his like locker. They're not really lockers, are they? Because there's no doors or nothing on them. It's just where you can hang your kit and that. And there's like a little wooden shelf, isn't there? And he just seems to decide, let's do some chin ups.
this segment's happening, they're having a conversation, he's doing that in the background, and then it just so happens that the wooden shelf decides to fucking break. You just see Ray fucking fall on his ass, and then Edge can't help but he starts corpsing and just starts laughing, all while they're trying to have this serious conversation. So
to be honest, what makes it even funnier for me is Edge, because he couldn't hold it. He was creased over that one.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's like a funniest home videos kind of thing, that they'd have easily made some money out of that video.
it's just so funny, isn't it? Where like you don't expect it to happen, and then obviously I think it's live TV as well. It's probably on Raw, and then just for him to just like he can't keep it. He has to laugh. And then the very last one I had on my list, and I'm sure there's a million more out there, but these are just the ones that came to the top of my head, was the Randy Orton RKO fail. So I don't know if you've seen this one, but I think, it's just an episode of Raw, and Jericho has got someone in the Walls of Jericho, maybe in Triple H or something like that, and Orton decides he's going to run off the ropes and hit Jericho with the RKO, and he goes to jump, but he just misses Jericho. So Jericho's there holding the... He's got the Walls Jericho on, and Orton just flies past him and just doesn't grab Jericho at all, so he just falls on his ass. And Jericho's just like looking at him like, oh shit. So Orton has to get up quick and then run on the rope again and try it again. But it's just so funny, just the look that Jericho gives him, and the look from Orton like, oh shit, I fucked up.
Brilliant. Yeah, so there are, and again, Carl, you're a wealth of information on this. I'm sure you could do a top 100 if you wanted to, botches. But these are our sort of, well, I suppose top five each, but a top 10 with a few honourable mentions there. What I want to do as a nice gift to anyone who participates on our YouTube channel, I will actually try my best to provide links to each and every one of these in our description. So you'll have our video talking about the botches, but then I'll try and provide links to those botches as well, just to add a bit of usefulness for you. And that is pretty much the end of our third segment. Unless, obviously, Orange, do you have any botches that you want to discuss from the indie scene or AEW at all? Okay, fair enough. So there you go, they don't botch in AEW, as it turns out.
Yeah.
But so obviously, it's been another fun week. We want to, both Carl and I would like to thank Orange Cassidy for participating. I know you've got an incredibly busy schedule, but... it's been invaluable to our podcast. It's certainly a great addition. We hope to have you on in the future.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, some of the anecdotes you've made today, Orange, and, you know, we'll try and get some sound bites, you know, to share as well for future episodes. But yeah, you've just, you've contributed so much to today's show. So, you know, just want to echo Anthony's comments and, you know, thank you for joining us on our podcast today.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully we'll have some more special guests on in the future, but certainly for this week, that's it from us. So thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks guys. Take it easy.